The views and opinions expressed in this episode are those of the host of the program and its guests. They do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of WGTE Public Media. The Local Thread.
Hello, and welcome to what we believe will be an important hour of news and information. An hour in which we talk with newsmakers and ask them the questions you want us to ask. And yes, we'll press for answers that are more than PR talking points. Welcome to The Anderson Hour. We're immensely proud to be part of The Local Thread on WGTE FM 91 and streaming on WGTE.org. My name is Jerry Anderson. I grew up maybe a couple of miles from where I sit right now in the FM 91 studios. And it was as a kid that I was bitten by the broadcasting bug. You see, my brother and I had morning paper routes, and one of our customers was WTOD AM, which played the top 40 hits, really, on AM from a modest building located behind Southland Shopping Center. In those days, people were listening to music on AM. Don't take my word, ask your parents or grandparents. Most people didn't even have FM. And when I went to the station to collect money for the Toledo Times, that was the morning newspaper, I found myself standing at that traditional big glass window while on the other side were the disc jockeys. Characters, most of them. Good voices? Yeah, you better. I mean, it's radio. I knew I wanted to be a broadcaster before I became a teenager, as I recall. But as I grew up a bit, my interests broadened. My dad was a big consumer of news and information. He was never a broadcaster by trade, but his interest in current events somehow found its way into me. Someday I wanted to report the news, and I worked to make that happen, first at a radio station located down in Bowling Green, Ohio, and then I got a job at WSPD, an AM news station here in Toledo. In the fall of 1980, I was offered a job in Toledo Television News. I said yes. I mean, I think I would have paid them. No, check that. I couldn't. I didn't have any money back then. But that wasn't important. I was reporting news. And then 38 years later, I anchored my last newscast in Toledo. That was at WTOL. You see, my life and career is, so far, a series of dreams come true. I still love the news. I know it's dark sometimes, but the issues, the events, the people who interest us, who impact our lives. So, we kick off a new chapter as part of FM 91's The Local Thread. Right here on the Anderson Hour, it's an issue that has a lot of people talking to each other, talking at each other sometimes. Some people upset, others celebrating what they view as economic development victories. That issue is data centers. I was recently moderating a fascinating town hall. We streamed it from the Anthony Wayne High School auditorium at issue, data centers. And if you missed it, I hope you can check it out. So coming up here on the Anderson Hour, two very different views of that one issue from leading voices on data centers in both Ohio and Virginia. But first, the race to be Ohio's next governor. The Democratic field cleared in late fall when former Ohio Congressman Tim Ryan said he would not make a run for the governor's mansion. We also know that Republicans are already gathered around businessman, former presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy, which brings us to a fascinating scenario. Given recent Democratic ballot victories in New Jersey and Virginia, could Ohio, for so long a bellwether state, but more recently so Republican red, could the governor's mansion in Ohio be back in play this year? My first guest certainly hopes so, and I think believes so. Dr. Amy Acton is the former director of Ohio's Department of Health. You'll recall she gained national recognition, and deservedly so, for leading Ohio's COVID response program. And those who followed throughs on such things, who combed through data and hospital records, who study pandemics, will credit Amy Acton with saving lives in Ohio, possibly thousands of lives. Dr. Acton joins us. Do you ever sit and think about that and the difference you made in that time?
Thank you, Jerry. It's so wonderful to be here, first of all. And I've been on the road for a couple years now, listening deeply to Ohioans, going everywhere, and it's something that I hear the stories about. Like, it's so much more personal to me because people share with me the things they did, the heroism, being on the front lines, working in our hospitals, people lost, of course, and it was really an honor and a privilege to be a public servant in a moment like that.
Unfortunately, COVID responses and vaccines, like about everything else in our society, has become very political. I mean, you had armed demonstrators outside of your home in Bexley, and I didn't know much about Bexley, so my daughter moved down to Columbus. Bexley's a cool place, people. And I'm just wondering, when I heard, Dr. Acton, that you were out, did those images factor at all into your decision to enter this race?
You know, I have to say, while people think a lot about the politics, if you remember, I was involved at the very beginning of the crisis, so the first months. And what is amazing to me is that the love was so much greater than the hate. We think about the hate and vitriol that's been put forward since. But Ohioans' first reaction was to save one another. It was a privilege. You know, we put saving lives and saving our economy and all of it ahead of politics, and working alongside a governor every hour of every day. We're so proud of what Ohioans did. We flattened the curve in Ohio. We saved a lot of lives. And we actually opened earlier and got back to life sooner because we took, you know, swift and decisive action. And to be a part of that, you know, I often say to people, there was no order I could write that would flatten a curve. But what I could do was hold space for us, put the hard cards on the table, and tell the truth. It's been studied a lot. But by telling the truth, that allowed every leader everywhere in the state to solve problems they had never faced before. You had to run a hospital, a nursing home, a school, your business, prisons, homeless shelters. Every single one of us had to solve things we had never done before. And by putting that on the table in a way, the way we did, the governor and I, really people rose to the occasion. And again, I can't say enough. It's easy to think about a whole 4 years of COVID, but of course, I was around for the first 6 months, and it was really reminded me of what we're capable of doing when we all have a good North Star to point to, and we work together the way we did.
All right, let's take that as background and answer this question for me. Dr. Amy Acton should be Ohio's next governor. Why?
Well, you know, I'm running for governor because people in the state are struggling, Jerry. As I said, I've been going everywhere, listening deeply for a couple years now. And unlike what my opponent has said, that we're sort of lazy or mediocre or should work harder, the Ohioans I am meeting are working very hard, but there's no breathing room left. And I'm running because I refuse to look the other way while these bad actors and special interests that are taking over our state houses and state houses all over the country, I will add, keep taking us backwards on nearly every measure in Ohio. And everywhere I go, people are longing for change. They are longing for public servants again who solve the problems of everyday life. They don't want to actually care what party you are, but they want to know you're going to do something about things that, like cost of living, about childcare, about housing, about property taxes. You know, I could go on and on, healthcare costs. These are the things that are not controversial. And the truth is, our state house hasn't been working on any of those things. They've been working on special interest things that are for a select few instead of the 95% of issues that all of us want to see addressed. So, you know, I've been given the privilege of having a voice in a very unique constituency. It doesn't know party. That's one of the reasons I realized I had something I could do about it. And I think we're living in a time where all of us have to refuse to look the other way when we see things we can't unsee.
I also mentioned earlier Bexley, which is very cool, and it's pricey, part of Columbus. The governor's mansion is there, for example. You're a doctor by profession. Mm-hmm. To some out there, say, boy, rolling in the dough. But your upbringing was anything but the story of born with a silver spoon in her mouth. I mean, it was more like the white plastic spoons, wasn't it? And how has that informed the public servant that you see yourself as?
Jerry, when I said that I refuse to look the other way, a lot of that really does come from my childhood. And it's been the work of my whole career, quite frankly, as a public servant. And I'm almost 6 years old, so it's getting up there. But I grew up, I'm very much an Ohio girl. I grew up in Youngstown. You know, my grandfather came to this country to work, you know, in the steel mills because it was an opportunity for a better life. But I had a very rough childhood up to the age of 12. I, I've been honest about this because I think it's so important. You know, I'm not the only one who's had a rough childhood, I'm sure, listening in today. And the thing is, more than 50% of our kids are living in poverty in our state, you know, in some places of our state, even higher. And my childhood was a frequent flyer of children's services, a lot of abuse, a lot of neglect. I lived in a tent in the middle of winter. And finally, you know, at the age of 12, I was removed from that situation. And I literally moved a mile away from people who know Youngstown or that area. Mm-hmm. I literally crossed Gypsy Lane, but I stayed in an apartment. I stayed in one school for the next 6 years instead of moving constantly like I had been. And I got a good education and I got a med school, NeoUCOM, a 6-year BFMD accelerated program here in Ohio. I got in that right out of high school. So, you know, obviously my life got a lot better and you know, but it is the gifts of things like a great education, great libraries, the things I care about and have fought for, because I know how much it made a difference for me. And when you're a kid like that, Derry, you notice when people look the other way. Yeah. You know, you notice when adults see bad things happening. But the truth is, a lot of times now that I'm older, I realize people just didn't know what to do about it, what they could do to fix it. But the people you always remember in your life are the people who didn't look the other way. You know, and I often give the example of a couple. My brother and I would walk to school very hungry and they would pull us up on their porch and feed us breakfast, just knowing that in the neighborhood. And I believe that we're living in a time where we're seeing a lot of things. This is not normal. It is not normal to be going backwards on nearly every measure in the state. We're the 7th largest state. We have all the assets in the world, but we had a very, very corrupt pay-to-play state house. And what we need are people who are willing to look the bad things in the eye, no matter how tough they get. You know, I'm a very much of a fighter. I'm a scrappy kid from Youngstown in my heart still. And I really think, though, everywhere I go in Ohio, people are exhausted. They're exhausted by the hate and the vitriol and the culture wars. And they want to see public servants doing the work. And that work is the work I've done my whole life. And it really has to do with that childhood, the things I've chosen to work on.
You're a physician. You're a public servant. You go to great lengths to say you've never been a politician. But still, you have to know that your old stomping grounds, the Mahoning County, Youngstown, Trumbull County, Warren, that whole part of the state, those were once Democratic strongholds where it appears MAGA now currently holds sway. How did that happen? And don't you have to answer that if you hope to change it?
You know, what I know about Ohio, and this has been, you know, everywhere we go, we see these record crowds of people showing up, and it does not know party. Ohioans at heart, I think, are very independent thinking. You know, most people actually do identify as independent. And, you know, the Mahoning Valley went for Obama twice, and then it went for Trump, you know. And what I see now, people are feeling the effects of very chaotic policies. It's affecting their day-to-day lives. And what they're actually longing for are people who do this work, you know, which was always seen not as this, you know, drama that we're seeing now, but was, you know, kind of a dignified work of putting the people first. And what we are is a very gerrymandered state. We're a purple state. And so, you know, obviously things are also rigged in a certain way. And what's unique, I think, about my campaign, and I would say this isn't something I could have invented. No politician could invent the constituency I have. All the polling, and most people don't know, both sides of the aisle were polling me while I was still on air during COVID. I couldn't understand why, but it turns out that they had recognized something that I've really come to know. You know, a bond formed during that time, and it's deeper than politics. And so I'm not seeing a dramatically partisan experience going around. People are really looking for folks that they can trust to do the hard work on the issues they care about. And this is so important also to say, Jerry, this is no longer about Democrat or Republican. What we're seeing in this country and certainly in this state is extreme wealth, power, special interests, and ideology against all the rest of us. When you talk to people and have the privilege that I've had of listening, hardly anyone is saying anything controversial. almost everything people talk about is so simple and straightforward and pragmatic, but they are hard problems to solve. Like, housing is a complicated issue that takes getting multiple systems around the table, local, state, federal, to all sit around a table and get to work on solving the problems so that people have affordable housing. Education, you know, our education is under attack, and our measures are going backwards on that as well. You know, the hard, wicked hard problems that we have to deal with, you know, these are the ones we want to see public servants working on again. And so I think we're going to see, just like we saw in the last election, a lot of people looking for folks who are going to do that work.
Well, you hit on a couple of things there that are key to me that I have harped on this program over the years. A lot of what is happening in Columbus at the State House vis-a-vis public education. It seems like public education is in their crosshairs. They just seem to be angry with public education, and they can't do enough, voucher systems and other, to help the private schools. And I'm just a kid that came up through public schools here in Toledo and in Bowling Green, Ohio. So we're going to have to leave it right there.
I can't say enough.
Go ahead.
Oh, you know, we invented public schools in this state, Jerry, right there in the Northwest Territory. We made an essential agreement that everyone would get an education in our state. It was different than the East Coast. It was different than Europe. And literally, we still did not fund a bipartisan funding plan. You know, absolutely everywhere I go, public schools are the center of our community's way of life. And this is a really unifying issue that I think you'll hear a lot about this election. It's an honor and a privilege, Jerry. I hope we get a chance to talk in much more depth over time.
And this is,
more so.
We're on the air here, very first part of the year. This is going to be a campaign, so I would look forward to it. She's Dr. Amy Acton, Democratic candidate for governor of Ohio. Thank you for being with us on the Anderson Hour. It is so good to... I told somebody, listening to you being interviewed just recently on a Columbus TV station reminded me you had the perfect demeanor and the perfect voice to lead us back in the COVID time. It's very reassuring. It was very calm, and it was based on science and facts. Let's talk again as the race progresses.
That would be a wonderful honor and a privilege, and take good care, everyone.
Thanks, Dr. Acton.
And please note that we've reached out to the Ramaswamy campaign, so stay tuned for future developments. You're listening to The Anderson Hour, part of the brand new The Local Thread on FM 91 and streaming on WGTE.org. It was late November when WGTE hosted and streamed a town hall on the issue of data centers. I was honored to moderate the event about an issue that evokes strong emotions. Data centers are popping up all over the country, the world, really, and Ohio is poised to be a major player in the development of these AI-driven hyperscale facilities. Why? Well, we have what they want and need, they being big tech. We have land, we have power, be that electric, natural gas, or other power sources. They do have a voracious appetite for power, these data centers. So in our town hall, you heard from some of the leading voices on both sides of the data center debate, but I actually spent more time with them, and I want to share that with you now. Starting with Kenny McDonald, who has led economic development efforts in Central Ohio for years. In fact, it was the Columbus area that saw the first of these data centers a decade ago.
Data centers. You mention data centers to people these days, be prepared. Some folks just can't see straight when it comes to that, and with good reason, they'd say. Okay, let's find out. First of all, define terms. A data center. And this is just out of IBM, a physical room, or a building, or a facility that houses IT, think information technology, houses IT infrastructure for building, running, delivering applications and services. It also stores and manages the data associated with those applications and services. So that's a data center. Yes, they come in different sizes, but it is the mega centers, the so-called hyperscale data centers that have people predicting skyrocketing utility bills, shortages of resources, think electricity and water, danger to our environment, the ruination of life as we know it in this country. All right? And to be honest, it's clear that these monstrously large facilities, campuses they're called, but make no mistake, there are no ivy-covered walls here on these campuses. They do have a voracious appetite for electricity, maybe water, maybe natural gas. We're going to try to find out. Their proposed development almost never happens without local government bestowing large tax breaks on these keepers of the cloud. That is the cloud, you know, right? Okay. Well, WGTE Public Media has been exploring the issue of data centers, and today we keep our discussion going with Kenny McDonald of Columbus, recently stepped away from leading a huge development group down there, One Columbus. Up in our neck of the woods, think the Regional Growth Partnership. Kenny has formed his own consulting company working in areas such as site selection and really everything connected to economic development, working with companies, working with public entities. Mr. McDonald, thank you for joining us. You've lived through it. By the way, let's get a plug out. His new venture is Little Dry Consulting. And I just learned the background on the title. I'm not sure we'll have time to get to it, but I love it. This is an issue, Kenny, that has people, our friends and neighbors, painting signs, marching, even in bad weather, voting people out of office if those people even express an interest or an openness to data centers. And the rest of the time, they are our friends, our neighbors. We go to church together. We might even have a cold one together. Why is that, Mr. McDonald? Why are people so passionate about data centers?
I think it's very rational. First of all, thank you for having me. But sure. I actually think the reaction is very rational. It's a time of an incredible change. And while we've had data centers for decades, hosting what we have on our phones and the pictures we used to take, that's growing exponentially. And with the creation of AI and the new technologies, the new servers stuff, the last 3 or 4 years has been even more change on top of that. So pausing to ask good questions, to have good debate about this is a rational response, and I think a good one. And I think what you're doing with this town hall is a really great service, because there are facts in the middle of this. There is misinformation, and it takes good people pausing, taking time, sitting down, and rationally working through the conversation. And I'm pretty sure that places that do that are going to be in a really good space.
I've spent a career in local broadcast news. And so when you say misinformation and you see the stuff that is out there, and frankly, if I took that as fact myself and I lived near a proposed, I'd be up in arms too. I really would. What issues, what large issues bother you the most that are being passed off as fact? And you're shouting in social media, wait, it's just not true.
Well, there's a few things. Number one is that data centers and the tech companies are doing this in a silo. Honestly, this is you and I using AI to do our everyday jobs. It is our military, it's our government, it's our hospitals and healthcare providers, and almost every corporate entity in the country or the world launching AI initiatives and using technology to do things faster and in some cases way better. Where that physically happens is in these data centers. Because of cybersecurity risks and things like that, these have to be within the boundaries of the United States, which I think is a huge benefit to us. Some of the misinformation is that they all use the same amount of water, or they all use the same amount of energy, and they all have the same approach. That's not true. There's lots of different approaches. There's lots of different entities. They approach projects differently. These aren't a fit for every community in the country. And there are places in the country where you get over-indexed on any one industry. Ohio is a great example of that. We've been over-indexed on industries in the past in our history and had to rebuild and do things differently. Places like Northern Virginia have a real debate because there's such a concentration of them, even globally, they're world leader in it. Places like Central Ohio have a little bit of a foothold, but it's been a great benefit for us here in Central Ohio as we've dipped our toe in the water.
Oh, Kenny McDonald, let's continue down that road, because you have lived with it. You've dealt with data centers for at least a decade down there, haven't you? It seems to me that we could carve through some of the misinformation by going to places where they are already up and running and have been. So tell me, in Central Ohio, let me run some of these past you. Have my utility bills skyrocketed because of the data centers' desire and thirst for things like electricity?
And I know none of us do this, me included, but if you get out your utility bill and understand where the charges are coming from, it's not really because of the data center growth. It's a variety of aspects that are making energy more costly across the country, including here in Ohio. So the data centers have not translated into an additional expense, but it is true that your utility bills are going up.
Well, you would admit they use a lot of electricity. Where's it coming from? Who's paying for it?
They use a lot of electricity and a lot more than they used to. I'll just, you know, there's the numbers are kind of all over the place, but if you do an old Google search, use X amount of energy. If you use Gemini, which is Google's AI source, you're using almost 10 times the energy to calculate that answer to come back to you in mere seconds. And so absolutely they're using a ton more energy. What's happened though is they've been, I think, in a good way, a forcing mechanism for us to pause and realize that for decades we have not been investing in our grid, in our electrical infrastructure. And in Ohio's case, we've not been investing in generating energy as much as we should. And we're making some strides in doing that now. And I think some really positive changes that we have to do to compete for manufacturing, not just data centers, for manufacturing, for all the other uses that across our economy. And ultimately, to bring our costs down, we're going to have to control our own energy destiny.
I want to come back to that, but you also touched on something earlier, and it's real sensitive to those of us up here in Northwest Ohio. Water. We've had issues in Northwest Ohio with the quality of water. You know, the algal blooms, which are annual events now in the western basin of Lake Erie. But I think what people are more concerned about, again, is quantity. They use a lot of water. Are they going to compete with my water? In Northwest Ohio, for example, Kelly, this summer we had a very dry summer. Go to Waterville, a neat little village right there on the Maumee River. You could walk across the Maumee on the riverbed. It was exposed this summer. And so we have people, I think, justifiably asking us, so if that happens again and we have a water shortage, who gets the water? Us or the data centers? The water issue is of real concern.
I think these are really great questions to ask. And as I said, if you've seen one hyperscale data center, you've seen one hyperscale data center. They're constantly evolving and changing. As you've said, in Central Ohio, we've been at this about 10 years. And, 10 years ago, they were built in a certain way. Now they're being built in a whole different way. Many of them are very, very minimal water users, as a matter of fact. Some still use water to cool down their servers and use that as a cooling mechanism, which is what they use the bulk of the water for when they do. But a lot of the new data centers are not big water users at all. So I think that's a question to ask. They also, when they do use water, I'd say they've become very, very sophisticated water users. Water has a cost. That's a cost to these operations, as they're constantly trying to use less energy and less water, less resources to produce the power that need to run these things. And so they're becoming really great water technology experts and sharing water, recycling water, and stuff like that. Ask those questions, and I think you will be pleasantly surprised by the answers 9 out of 10 times with those companies.
We should also point out, at least it's my understanding, you're the expert, which is why we're so thrilled to be talking with you today. The water that is used, and it is for cooling, folks, you know your own computer, right? Your little computer at home produces heat. Now stack up hundreds, thousands of these servers. There's a lot of heat being generated there. They need to be cooled down. But that water doesn't have to be treated potable water that would come out of our tap, does it?
No, there's all kinds of uses for gray water in this. And as I've said, you know, they're investing billions in these facilities. That includes water technologies to help them recycle and actually maybe even take gray water in and push out something that's much cleaner. And you have to work with your local water systems to innovate and advance. And what we're finding here in Central Ohio is it's actually producing some really great conversations and helping us evolve what is one of the larger water systems in the country, which is the city of Columbus.
Kenny McDonald, our guest out of Columbus, you use a phrase, a qualifier, if done correctly, dot, 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 These things can be job creators. We'll talk a bit about that. They can spur associated development. The things that data center backers regularly tout. But that phrase, if done correctly, also implies that things can be done incorrectly. So give me the red flags that we should be watching for. What is an indication that something's being done incorrectly?
Well, I think 10 years ago, when these started to come to Central Ohio, they were billion-dollar projects. And, you know, we're in trillions of debt, and we throw around billions like they're millions anymore, seems in Washington, D.C. and stuff like that. So when someone came with a $1 billion project 10 years ago, we were moving very quickly. And, you know, I'd say we did some agreements that we've since evolved and changed and amended and stuff to be more rational. Everybody's gotten a little bit more sober about this. And this conversation is good evidence of that, which is, you know, we're asking good questions about when are you going to need the energy? Is that over a 10-year period? What's your ramp up? What's your water usage? How do you ramp that up? If you don't use it, can we claw that back? You know, are you going to pay for that if you don't use it? We've learned a lot in the process. Our utility has here in Central Ohio, AEP's learned a lot in that process, and our communities have learned a lot in the process. And I would say when we close a data center deal, particularly a hyperscale data center here now, Google has 3 campuses, Amazon Web Services has almost 7+ campuses and growing here. Meta has some of their largest land holdings here. We're learning together, and we've built relationships, and we're sitting down with them saying, this is what we're trying to achieve. They're explaining what they want to achieve, and then we're making a rational agreement. That wasn't always the case 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so I'd say pause, ask questions, and like you would with a manufacturer, with a logistics operation, with any other use, cut a good deal that's good for your community and good for your good for the state of Ohio.
Seems to me there should be somebody, and maybe there is, there should be a network where people, for example, township trustees, county commissioners, they're great people, they're our neighbors, but they're not experts on there should be a clearinghouse of, hey, we've been through it, folks, ask these questions and don't settle for the wrong answer. Does that exist?
It does, maybe a little bit more informally than you would think, but okay. Of course, Jobs Ohio has been at the center of all these transactions and stuff, and they have some really great energy experts inside the operation that can actually talk to you about what other communities have done. And then we here in Central Ohio, we've had people come to Dublin and Hilliard and New Albany, where the concentration of these are, from around the country now. And tour the facilities, tour the parks that they're in, learn about the infrastructure that we've put in place, and actually how we've constructed the deal. Now, everybody has a little different tax situation, and communities are different, but I think you can really learn a lot. I've attended some meetings with mayors' associations and stuff like that here in Central Ohio, with mayors across Ohio that are coming here to learn. And I think that's really positive.
And we've had a contingent of people I know from Northwest Ohio that have come down and visited the aforementioned New Albany, which is a hotbed of data center activity. You mentioned Jobs Ohio. I have to ask the job creation piece of this, because just go past in Wood County, folks. You can see it from 75. You can see it from 25. The Meta, that's parent company Facebook, building a huge data center there. I told Kenny, because he's in Columbus, it looks like a parking lot on any football Saturday in Columbus when the Buckeyes are home. There are just scads of vehicles during this construction projects, and those are construction project, but those are, and those are very well-paying jobs. But when this thing is built out, it's a relatively small number of jobs for the amount of tax incentive being offered, isn't it?
I'd say yes and no. I would offer and maybe reinforce what you said. Our experience is that the construction jobs at most of these facilities is going on 5, 7, even 10 years. And in some construction careers, that's a whole career.
Yeah.
Tradespeople from around the country coming in that have become part of the Columbus region now and are helping us build things like Intel and some of the pharmaceutical facilities and stuff like that, that trades muscle that we've built through our data center locations has been terrific. So it's great, in many cases, union jobs here in Ohio being created. Second is, it's not necessarily a disadvantage that they don't have a lot of jobs, full-time jobs associated with the actual entity at the end of the day. If you're cutting the deal correctly, which I'd say 99% of these are done really well by local communities that are getting amount of revenue, maybe a healthy ROI on their investment, and they're not overloaded with maybe hundreds and hundreds of new people coming to their schools. So, and there isn't a lot of other associated infrastructure like there is with maybe even a huge manufacturing plant. Think of all the infrastructures built around Stellantis or built around Honda or stuff like that. That is not necessary for one of these data centers. And so school districts might be getting a healthy check out of the deal that's cut and do very well and not receive a lot of new students, but have a lot of new revenue that can improve the quality of education in these local districts around Ohio.
We're getting short on time here, but I've got to get to this point because it got my attention. You point out that the cloud, what, that used to be a place we'd put Christmas photos and our pet photos and the reunion pictures, right? And you're saying, yeah, but that's not so much the cloud these days. You mentioned earlier our medical records, all. I wanted to get you, maybe even this could be of national defense importance. That got my attention. What do you mean?
100% the case. And so if you look at where our military data is stored, it's in these hyperscale data centers. In fact, the military branches are all building these for themselves as a client. But I would also consider the data that we have from our healthcare institutions and our financial information to be of national security. Our airlines run on the cloud and in these hyperscale data centers. And you go online to Delta or United or American or Southwest, it's being run in the cloud and it's being run on AI now. And if that goes down, we have a national security problem. We have hysteria if something goes down for a few hours now and we can't log into something. 100% we are in a race with China that we have to win. And these facilities that are being built have to be backed up by a secure energy grid. We have to make big investments there, which is part of the reason maybe some of your bills are going up. That we haven't invested in decades and decades and decades. Shame on us for that. And then we're causing ourselves to look at where we're generating electricity, how we're generating electricity, and how we're building a more resilient, safe, and reliable and cost-effective infrastructure to compete with China, not just to host these data centers, but to bring back the manufacturing to this country that we so desire. I mean, in the Intel factory. There's a national security project just a few minutes from some of these data centers here in New Albany. The pharmaceutical operations we're building is our national security projects because we can't have our drugs manufactured elsewhere should there be an event in the country. We want that stuff inside of our borders and have control. This everything we're talking about is a national security issue.
The stakes are high, and he is Kenny McDonald, economic development guru of Central Ohio. I read someplace that on your watch, Columbus attracted an unprecedented $80 billion, with a B, in new capital down there. He knows whereof he speaks because they have lived with data centers for the past decade or so. Thank you for spending time with us to talk about some of the questions that need to be asked, some of the issues that are at the fore. Short term and long term when we deal with data centers. Thanks, Mr. McDonald. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
I find it interesting that Mr. McDonald, who on balance sees the good sides of data centers, did admit to me, and you heard it, that they're not a good fit for every community, that they need to be done the, quote, right way. But there's no right way, it seems, in the mind of my next guest. When I began studying the issue in preparation for the town hall, someone said, "Hey, Jer, you have to talk to the woman they call the data center slayer." So, of course, I did.
Elena Schlossberg is a former middle school counselor in Virginia. That's a wonderful job. But these days, she counsels much more than pre and early teenagers. Somewhere, I think about a decade ago, Ms. Schlossberg started a movement that now reaches across the country. It began simply as a group of neighbors forming I hope I get this right, the Coalition to Protect Prince William County. Protect the county from what? Well, data centers. The big ones. The hyperscale data centers, not unlike the huge one that is currently being built right here in the Toledo area in Wood County between Perrysburg and Bowling Green. Meta is the parent company of Facebook. It is a massive undertaking. And as we welcome Elena Schlossberg in and say hi and thanks for joining us, your goal, I believe, is to stop these hyperscalers. And I'm going to be asking if that's really even possible ahead. But let's go back. What first piqued your curiosity and then just got your goat about these big data centers?
So back in 2014, I was told that a massive transmission line, 120 feet tall, that needed a 120 foot easement of my property, was being proposed for an Amazon Web Services secretive data center campus that nobody knew about. And when I realized that not only did they want to exercise eminent domain over my property, my neighbor's property, and an untold number of other people's property, I realized that we were going to have to pay for Amazon's extension cord. So the wealthiest industry in the world, trying to stay secretive, was going to not only use our public utility to seize private property, but that we as ratepayers would have to pay for it. And that was the moment that I realized that this was a fight that I'd never undertaken before, but I was ready for the challenge.
So it started with, wait a minute, we're paying the bill for people with deep pockets, but it's gone far beyond who's paying the bills.
Now, what we are experiencing is it's not just the transmission lines. It's the diesel generators that come with the data centers. It's the loud noise from the air conditioning units. It's the generation that they're triggering that's going to cost hundreds of billions of dollars. It's the impact on our water. It's the impact on our air. It's the impact on our quality of life that cannot be replaced.
Okay. That's where I wanted to get to, so let's head that direction. Yeah, this is Elena Schlossberg from Virginia, where, believe me, Northern Virginia, folks, that's got to be the hotbed of data center activity in the country, isn't it, Elena?
It's the largest concentration of data centers in the world. And let me just correct one thing you said, that I talked to people across the country. I've talked to people across the globe.
Well, it is a global issue. Yes, and thank you for saying so. There is, as big as that is, though, there is something in all of us, even those who care mightily for others, that instinctually seeks self-preservation, protection, a survival instinct, if you will, the what about me movement. And my sense is, as you talk to folks, Elena, that for most people, the biggest concerns about data centers go to access to resources, electrical power, fresh water, the depletion of same, maybe the effects, not maybe, really the effects on my wallet. Are my electric and water bills going to skyrocket? Are those the concerns you're hearing out there?
Absolutely. So you can't have this kind of unprecedented energy demand and not experience not only the impacts to your home, but also to your electric bills. In Virginia, which is part of the PJM network, which Ohio is a part of as well, we are going to experience doubling, tripling, and quadrupling of our utility bills. And until the data center industry is held accountable for their infrastructure needs, that's going to continue. And that's really the biggest fight, is making the data center industry accountable.
So if somebody in central Ohio, where they have had a lot of data center activity dating back a decade ago, says, well, any electrical increase in electrical bills may go to, we have to generate more power, we just have to in society, but otherwise we haven't seen this big increase. That's what I'm trying to get to, Elena, because for all the fears, I think we have enough experience to say that's either a real fear or somebody's blowing smoke.
So here's what I would challenge everyone to do. Do your research. Listen to the directors of PJM, which is the regional grid operator that we are all a part of, Virginia and Ohio are inexorably connected through this regional grid operator. And the heads of PJM are saying the only reason that we are experiencing this need, this level of demand for infrastructure and generation, is data centers. Joe Bowring said it from PJM. And he the end of that sentence was a, and I remember it like it was yesterday, period. Only because of data centers. You don't need to believe me. Look at PJM.
Okay. Let's then put the increase in our electrical costs at the feet of data centers. But wait a minute. Is this just high-tech, evil, mean, and nasty people trying to get into our pockets? Here's where I want to go with this. Data centers are exploding in mind-numbing fashion. The pace of proliferation is frankly dizzying. Morgan Stanley says global spending on data centers projected to hit, ready folks, $493 billion this year. That sounds like a lot. Huh. Try $920 billion in just 3 years down the road. Facts and observation in reality tell me the data center frenzy is inevitable, and not just because big tech wants them, but because it needs them. And it needs them because we, the people of this country, demand access to our information services. We use it every day. The cloud doesn't just store our favorite pet photos, but our medical records, military information, I'm told. So that's where I'm going with what it sounds inevitable, Elena.
Okay, so I would disagree.
Go ahead.
Respectfully.
Yes.
There is the cloud. And you think of the cloud, and whoever came up with that terminology, genius. Because it's not that thing in the sky. It's those big boxes that are holding your information. It's true, your medical records, your bank records. What we are talking about is AI that is pushing us over the cliff. We are competing with critical resources. We're competing for land. We're competing for clean air. We're competing for water. One's going to win out, and it's not going to be us. And I am not a market watcher. Like you said, I'm not a financial analyst. I'm a middle school counselor. But the money that AI is investing, there is real concern that there is not the commensurate revenue or marketability of this product. And so what's happening is this gold rush. And you can see that in NVIDIA yesterday had a real dip in their chip stock. And it's because there is now a question, a real question in the financial market. Are we looking at another dot bomb? Because there's not the there. And we are all propping up this industry with our resources. If they want to build out, let it do them on their own dime. And then we'll see.
Your group has something, it sounds like, amounting to a 12-step program for stopping these data centers. And I can't go through point by point, but can you give me some of the steps that have worked most effectively for your group to this point?
You have to build community around this issue. It can't just be about your home and your immediate neighborhood, because the threats are far and wide. The transmission lines will travel miles. The diesel fuel will be smelled, you know, for miles around. You have gas turbines that are now turning up. The noise travels. So you have to build a community that understands this isn't just about your neighborhood. It's about the surrounding neighborhood. It's about your electricity bills. It's about a sense of justice and fairness. And you have to do it by talking to people. This is not a social media grassroots effort. You have to get out. You have to talk to your neighbors. You have to read the applications. You have to get educated. And you're lucky because all of us have put all that information out there for you to organize. And of course, the coalition is always available to speak to people. That's why I'm talking to you. I'm looking at a PJM deck, part of a deck right now, that says load increase in Columbus area, load increase in Melissa area, regional flows towards eastern and southern PJM regions. They're talking about thermal violations in your state. And those violations, what that means in layman's terms, are possible blackouts, because there's a supply and demand issue. And we are feeding a beast, and we're not thinking about the consequences. And Ohio is the next next target of this industry.
Well, what, I'm going to play devil's advocate here. What do we do about the millions of dollars the centers pump into local communities? We have a couple school districts in Wood County who are going to be on the receiving end of million-dollar checks. As pointed out, the checks come with not a lot of new kids coming to the area. or is that oversold?
Let me describe to you a project that was the largest in the world that we have stopped in the courts thus far, the Digital Gateway. When that application was first proposed, our supervisors talked about the $700 million of revenue we were going to be bringing into the county with no evidence. By the time that application actually went for a vote, it was down to $100 million. There aren't the long-term jobs, and that revenue, if the user of your data center is a federal contract, you can't collect those dollars. And every year that revenue will depreciate because it's based on those computer servers. And so like a car, when you buy a car, it's sparkly and new, but each year it depreciates. That's what's happening. And you have to ask yourself, when those diesel generators turn on and the data centers are built near your schools, they're built near your homes, is it gonna be worth it when the gas turbines turn on and you can't live in your home? Is it worth it? When your water resources are impaired, is it worth it?
Let me ask you, since you're there and I'm not, in some of the things people ask about, if I go past a data, if I live near a data center, can I hear it?
Most likely you will. There is actually a video of people who live near data centers, and what you hear are the chillers on top of the building. And now that we're experiencing grid stress in Virginia, those data centers are now being required to operate on their diesel generators. These are not diesel generators you buy at Lowe's. These are diesel generators the size of tractor trailers. And the sound and the smell they emit is choking. It is, you can't unhear it. People can't live in their homes.
I'm just letting that sink in here a little bit. Smelling it, hearing it, not able to live in my home. You have said there is a cliff ahead and that we're all collectively in the same bus racing toward it. Now that really sounds ominous, but take me there. What does life over the cliff look like?
So all you have to do is look at what's happening in Virginia. We are experiencing a transmission buildout that will be impossible to meet in time for this industry. And so last year, in 2024, we experienced a near grid collapse. What does that mean? That means that the lights will go out. We are experiencing more and more threats of what they call violations. When I say we're going over the cliff, what I mean is the lights are going to go off. The diesel generators are turning on. The gas turbines are turning on. So what happens to the communities when we're in a blackout and it's a hot red alert day? We can't run our air conditioning. We're struggling to pay our utility bills. This industry is building out an infrastructure that won't be able to be supported unless we pay for it. So financially, we're heading towards a cliff. Our air, the impacts to our air, our water, we are on a train that is taking us to a destination where one of us is going to lose, and it's going to be the people. And we need our elected leaders to step up.
Let's talk about that as an action step, because these groups that are developing data centers, they need to acquire massive amount of real estate. And they did that successfully, buying up farmland in Wood County. And there are numbers floating around Northwest Ohio of people being offered $200,000 per acre. That is a mind-numbing figure. Farmland, and we have great farmland in Northwest Ohio. Good farmland, 14, 15 grand an acre for farm purposes, for ag purposes. It'd be tough for me, anybody, I think, to turn down 200 grand per acre if that is an accurate figure. So I want to start there. Is that an area in which if the local zoning people, the local township trustees, because in Ohio we have counties, within counties we have townships. Townships are run by usually three people, and it's George down the road and it's Bud over. They're our friends, you know, they live there. Can they stop those on their own, or can these entities go around them? Can they acquire through eminent domain legally?
I don't know about Ohio, but you cannot eminent domain private property. And so obviously, in Virginia, $200,000 would be cheap. We have people being offered $1 million an acre. It's the amount of money is obscene. Your local leadership has never held more power to the future of not only your community, but your entire state. Zoning exists for a reason. And that zoning exists for the health and welfare of your entire community, not just a few farmers who will experience this generational wealth, but the energy needs and the resources demand that those data centers trigger impact everyone. And so you have to have an expectation that zoning is compatible with the surrounding uses and that farmland is here for a reason. We are at risk of sacrificing our real world for a digital world. And I really do mean that. And so your local leadership has to understand the broader impacts. This is not about climate change. This is literally about the clean air that you have access to, about your utility bills. Every single data center campus your local leadership approves is an increase in your electricity bill, because electricity is socialized among all of us. And public utilities were never intended to serve this kind of low demand.
You clearly believe in the power of people who engage. And you folks there in Northern Virginia have engaged. And you said something earlier. You've done the legwork. You can instruct us on action steps. Where can people find that information?
So go to protectpwc.org. www.protectpwc.org, and we'll link you to other organizations. We're just a tiny little nonprofit of four board directors who volunteer their time. Nobody gets paid, and we have connected to large organizations like a regional nonprofit environmental organization, PEC. They have information. Sierra Club, they have information. National Parks Conservation Association. I haven't even talked about the threats to our national parks. So people are lucky. All you have to do is Google. Do not use ChatGPT, I beg of you.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Yes, because with ChatGPT and all of the AI stuff out there, they need more data centers, which is your point, I'm sure. She's Alina Schlossberg. I find this story fascinating. Somebody who just decided to get involved and roll up the sleeves and now leads efforts not only nationwide but globally, because this is a global issue. Thank you for spending time with us. I'll look forward to talking with you again down the road.
Thank you so much. I'm anytime you want to chat.
My sincere thanks to Alina Schlossberg, Kenny McDonald, and Dr. Amy Acton. And especially my thanks to you, our audience, for The Anderson Hour. I'm Jerry Anderson. Have a great week, and I'd love it if you plan to join me again each and every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on FM 91 and WGTE.org.
The Local Thread is a production of WGTE Public Media. Episodes can be heard weeknights at 7 on FM 91 or anytime at WGTE.org.